It's fun to be inquisitive. Be nosy. Stick to your passion. Find out more for yourself. Quest is fun. Join me, Tristan Pang, on a journey of inspiration. Welcome to Youth Voices.
Hello everyone. It's great to see you all again. I'm lucky enough to have permission from NBR's Andrew Patterson to play his interview with Khan Academy's founder, Sal Khan. It's very informative and inspirational. But first, let's listen to Sal speaking to The Guardian.
I started working with my cousin Nadia, literally just tutoring her remotely on a phone. Then word had gotten around the family that free tutoring was happening, and so I found myself with 10, 15 cousins. And I started working on a little software app for them. And actually, even when it was just with them, and I saw that the practice was helping them, and I saw that for me as their tutor to get the data on what they knew and what they didn't know, that was helping me. That was the very early stages. Like, well, this is useful. We're at least the small cohort of folks are finding use out of it. Then I made the first videos once again for my cousins. And my cousins famously, when I asked for feedback, told me that they liked me better on YouTube than in person. And then once it was on YouTube, within a few months, it was clear that people who were not my cousins were watching. And then they started to put comments out. And we're talking about early 2007 at this point, where I get a comment, thank you, or this really helped, or I passed algebra because of this, or this is the reason why I was able to major in engineering, or I've left the military and now I'm going back to college because Khan Academy's gotten up to speed. So that's frankly what kept me motivated to keep essentially putting all my spare time into this thing. I had a day job in finance. But then by 2009, I had, there's about 50,000 people who are using the site every month. There was starting to be a little bit of interest from people saying, hey, you should do this for real. There was one gentleman who's an entrepreneur in California who kept calling me up. He's like, what are you doing working in finance? This isn't like what you should be doing.
We now have on the order of 2,200 videos.
The first time I kind of got into teaching and I felt like it was something that I enjoyed, and I felt like it was something that hopefully people felt that I was able to help them was in high school. And so we would have these after school essentially practice sessions where there could be a freshman that shows up and I'd be a junior. And I was like, look, I know you haven't learned geometry yet, or I know you haven't learned trigonometry yet, but let me teach you a little bit of it because I think that'll allow you, I think you can get it. And I saw, like, hey, if you're able to work with someone in this way, you make it approachable, you let them ask questions, and you give them the intuition, people can learn all sorts of things.
And for dollars is their $30 million plus the $20 million from the American manufacturer. If this does not blow your mind, then you have no emotion.
I always find it incredibly unsatisfying to get the formula or to memorize and just kind of regurgitate those ideas. It wasn't an IQ thing. It wasn't a how smart are you thing. It wasn't a work ethic thing. It was really how did you look at learning thing. And I started to feel like, boy, this way that I've been doing it inadvertently has helped me, and maybe I can help other people view things the same way.
In a traditional classroom, you have a couple of homework, lecture, and then you have a snapshot exam.
I view the lecturing as the least important part of the educational process. You have only a scarce amount of time when you're with human beings. When you're with a teacher, you're with your peers. That shouldn't be squandered by doing this lecture, which frankly you can get on demand through a video. And on top of that, when it's on demand, there's all sorts of extra benefits you get. It allows the classroom allows the humans to interact with each other, allows peer-to-peer tutoring, allows projects. You can start to think about not having every student having to go at the same pace. You can start differentiating instruction. And even these ideas, to some degree, are old wine in new bottles. There's been two schools of camp traditionally. There's been kind of the play-based, exploration-based, Montessori type of mindset. And say, yeah, that's how someone learns. They learn by exploring. They learn by doing things. But then you have your more traditionalist camp. It says, no, look, that's fine, but how are these kids going to learn algebra? Are they going to discover it on their own? The way I view it is it's actually a false choice. I actually think that now you can do both.
What I do is I assign the lectures for homework, and what used to be homework, I now have the students doing in the classroom.
The idea of flipping the classroom, it's the idea of instead of class time being where you deliver a lecture, where you get information delivery, and you go home to do homework, that you do problem solving, you flip those two around. So class time is for problem solving, do work with your peers, get direct help from your teacher, and the lecture can now happen at your own time and pace. Well, why do you have to move everyone at the same pace now? What we really believe in is what I would call kind of a self-paced, mastery-based system that focuses on when human beings are in a room, that human beings interact with each other. It's not as catchy as flip, but it's kind of where we are. I'm very careful here that I'm actually not going after the educators. What I hope educators view us as is a resource to help empower them, to help them, frankly, do the things that they always wanted to do. We want the teachers, their own humanity, to come out in the lesson plan, which I think all teachers want. And we're just a resource to empower them to do it.
Now, let's go to Andrew with his interview.
When Sel Khan decided in 2009 to throw in his job and not insignificant salary as an analyst working for a leading US hedge fund to pursue his idea of creating a revolutionary online learning platform, few people realized he would, in less than a decade, completely shift the dial in education globally in the way that Khan Academy, that's K-H-A-N, has been able to achieve. Millions of students around the globe with a device and internet connection can now literally teach themselves a range of subjects from maths to economics and biology to history, delivering on Khan Academy's vision to provide a world-class education for anyone, anywhere. And thanks to funding from the Gates Foundation, the platform and its contents of more than 8,000 video lessons is provided completely free of charge. It's a good example of the growing impact that not-for-profits are having on the world by taking a holistic and innovative approach to the problems they're seeking to solve. Well, during a recent visit to the United States, I sat down with Sel Khan and began by asking him if he ever imagined that Khan Academy would grow to the size it has today, where millions of students can literally self-direct their own learning.
I definitely had some dreams. I read a lot of science fiction books, but I knew not to get too hopeful. I said, hey, if this would just be useful for my family, that by itself is worth doing. But I did realize that these things like on-demand video or interactive software, there's no reason, if it's useful for 15 people, no reason I can't be useful for 15 million or 150 million people.
Do you feel that the world might have finally caught up to you? You might have been a bit ahead of your time 10 years ago?
In some ways, I think in some ways the world and Khan Academy has a long way to go. A lot of the ideas that we've definitely been focused on for some time around personalized learning, competency-based learning, students having agency over their learning, having access wherever and whenever they need it, these are definitely mainstream conversation topics now. But if you visit classrooms, or if you think about the architecture of a traditional academic system, they still are pretty similar to the way they've been for the last 200 years. I hope that over the next 5, 10, 20 years, and it's not going to be Khan Academy by itself, in conjunction with teachers and educators and parents and governments, that we can help move reality to where the conversation now is.
And just picking up on that point, you've grown rapidly, yet there still seems to be a reluctance by many educators to fully embrace Khan Academy and similar education-based platforms into their teaching. Has it surprised you that 10 years on, you're still having to overcome a certain amount of resistance?
No, and we don't think it's unreasonable resistance. There's some very, very good teachers who I think they have a reasonable suspicion of technology. For a long time, there have been many attempts to use technology for technology's sake without having a real educational reason for doing it or a real human reason. I also think there's suspicion of, is technology here to replace the human being? Is it to dehumanize? And what we, and not just Khan Academy, but everyone in the technology world, one, we have to be clear that technology is not an end. It's a means to an end of more personalization, better learning, that it's not a replacement for the physical, that it should help liberate the physical. If students can get explanations, if they can get practice at their own time or pace, then when they go to the classroom, they can have more interaction with their peers, their teacher knows what they need better. And so we're working with many educators. There's millions that are already using us in some way, but how do we better meet their needs so that we can better personalize and humanize what they do?
So a decade on, you must have been able to build up a body of evidence to substantiate that argument by now.
Yeah, and it's coming in various dimensions. We've done multiple efficacy studies in classrooms where if students complete 60% of their curriculum on Khan Academy in conjunction with teachers, that they're seeing 1.8 times the learning grade gain that you would typically see in a year. We just had a major efficacy study released with the College Board, which administers the SAT, the main college admissions exam here in the United States, and we saw that 20 hours on Khan Academy doubled the amount of gain students saw from the 10th or 11th grade all the way to the 12th grade. And what was really exciting about this, and this would have been science fiction 5-10 years ago, this was a study with 300,000 students who had synced their Khan Academy accounts to their College Board accounts. And so when they took the PSAT, which is a pre-SAT, in 10th grade, that acted as a diagnostic for personalized learning. The Khan Academy software knew their weak points and their strengths and could immediately help fill in those gaps. And so we were able to track them over 2 years and come up with this efficacy data.
And of course, this has been the big development for Khan Academy in the last couple of years, has been your move into SAT prep, which previously was an area you had to pay for to get coaching. How much is that going to be a game changer in the US, do you think?
This is actually an area where hopefully it's already been a bit of a game changer. As you mentioned, there's always at least been a perception here in the U.S. and really through the world that middle class and upper middle class students had access to paid tutors that gives them an edge. And especially in things, high stakes tests like the SAT, many people would spend thousands of dollars on things like this. So that was the first motivation. Let's create something that is the best, but is also free. The data just cited shows that there's no other paid test prep that can even come close in terms of that level of efficacy and that level of ability to prove. And one thing that we highlight and the College Board highlights, and I think this is what drives the efficacy, and it's not rocket science, is that most test prep is historically, how do you game the exam? How do you guess? How do you rule out answers? While we and the College Board are really focused on how do you fill in the gaps in your knowledge?
Now, this has, of course, been, you know, the primary purpose of Khan Academy, dealing with what started off with STEM, and now you've even moved into areas like financial literacy. How much has your thinking perhaps changed and evolved over the last decade about, you know, the purpose of school and learning will be and should be?
It's interesting. You know, in a lot of ways, some traditional ideas around the importance of reading, writing, and mathematics are only further enforced. You know, it's very sexy these days to talk about data analytics and coding. And those are nice, but actually the ability to write well, have solid reading comprehension and critical thinking skills that could be exhibited through things like mathematics, I think is as important as ever. In fact, it might be more important. And so one of the important things is, you know, as we're entering into the 21st century is in the past, your education could be seat time based. You sat in a chair for 12 years in K through 12 and another 4 years, and you kind of learned the stuff, and that was enough for you to get a nice white collar job and a middle class life. I think in the world we're moving into, you actually really need to know your material, and you actually need to know it well. And not only do you need that strong foundation, but you have to have that meta skill of how do you learn things in the future? When the new technology comes out, when society communication mechanisms change, how do you take advantage of those new things? That's the meta skill. And so hopefully we're helping to build both of those. We can help with that core content. Even if you're a college student and you've forgotten a little bit of your algebra, we can help there. If you are racing ahead and you're ready to learn the next thing, we can help there. But also if you just want to build that muscle, the learning how to learn, tools like Khan Academy can be valuable.
And in terms of those soft skills, creativity, problem solving, those sorts of things, obviously elements of them are embedded into the platform. But where do you see those soft skills developing in the future and the way that Khan Academy might be able to support that?
We're going to try to support as many of the soft skills as possible. You know, once again, this metacognitive skill of learning how to learn, how to set goals and assess yourself. But I think this is where you can't discount how valuable the physical classroom is, the teacher is, especially for younger students, you know, all the way to young adults. And our goal is work with educators, work with researchers, so that the technology can do what it does well, make sure you know your core content, make sure that you know you have the tools to learn and then prove what you know, leverage the best research out there on growth mindset and grit, work that into the product so it can reach hundreds of thousands, if not millions of students, and then liberate the teacher so that he or she can spend more time not only building, but also giving feedback on and assessing students' character strengths, their metacognitive traits, how well they work with each other, how well they collaborate, things that the technology is going to take a long time for it to get anywhere close to what a human being can do.
The final part of the interview will be on next month's show, on the first Wednesday at 2:10 p.m. So that's it from me, Tristan Pang. I hope you enjoyed the show. Please like Youth Voices with Tristan Pang on Facebook and visit my website www.quest.com. www.ms-is-fun.org.nz. See you next month. Bye.
Join me again for another exciting program next month on the first Wednesday at 2:10 p.m. or listen anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/youthvoices or listen to the archive on my website www.questisfun.org.nz/youthvoices. Youth Voices.